Hi everyone, my name's Anna, I'm an addict. And thanks very much for your share, Matthew. It got me thinking. I mean, I thought I got clean when I was young. I was 21. But 17 is really young. And I was thinking about what I was doing at 17. And it was my first year. I was very young when I finished school, and I'd gone from, you know, year 12, and I was 16. I'd just turned 17. I went to uni, college. And I spent my entire time in the toilets hitting up. I was so frightened. I was a shell. And I had this facade of, oh, my God, I'm going to go to uni. I'm the only person in... Well, there was me, my mum, my sister. My mum hadn't been to uni. My sister hadn't been to uni, so I was going to go to uni. So I was this amazing person going to uni, and I was in the toilets hitting up because I all of a sudden had to be an adult. I all of a sudden had people looking at me going, well, who are you? What are you going to do? What do you think about this? And I had no idea, no idea. So, you know, that's what I was doing at 17. So, and I think it's interesting. I want to talk a little bit about my using because it helps me remember what I'm doing here. You know, I mean, I didn't use for long. You know, I was, you know, I've got a son who's 13, and at the age of 13, I went to a dance at my sister's school. That another school, there's this big dance. I went and I had got vodka and orange and I drank it all and I got paralytic and I got drunk and I threw up and they drove me home and I didn't know and I wanted to do it again. And that's what I was doing at 13. And I look at my son now and I think, oh, you know, it's just a world away from where I was. And it's not, I mean, I'm, you know, and I sort of think, oh, how? What's so different? It was the mix of my mother, my father, me and my sister. It was a bad mix of people. My father, really not a good mix of people. So, you know, my dad is an alcoholic and he's a gambler and he gambled away everything we had and then fucked off. I'm not meant to swear, am I? But that's what he did. He left. I'm sorry. So he left and he left mum with the two girls and all this debt. So poor old mum went out to work. We were catching a tram to primary school, making our own lunches because the poor woman was working. So, you know, once Con left, there was the mix of the three girls, and it was not a good mix. My sister was angry. I was lying. You know, like there was, we were all, it was not a good mix. And my mum was not available because she was worried. And so by the time, you know, I sort of hit college at 17, I was a basket case, really, and using, pretty much using anything and everything. And what I used to use at school, because 13 is very young, and I didn't use it every day, but I'd go and get car sickness tablets, and I'd go to chemist after chemist on the way home, you know, because I was catching the train and public transport to school. And I would get these car sickness tablets and I would drop them. And I'd drop them in the morning, I'd drop them at lunchtime, I'd drop them in the evening, and I'd drop them all weekend. And then I was working, you know, we had these little part-time jobs, and it was just such a world away from what my kids are doing. My eldest son's 15, and at 15, I was dressing up and putting shoes on, going to pubs and drinking and finding myself in situations with guys that I was really frightened of and doing things with guys who I didn't know, who are a lot older than me, and being really very, very frightened all the time, but just drinking to cover it, just drinking, drop the pills, smoke some dope, do anything just to kind of hide this fear. I was a shell. And what something Matthew said, something about relationships that he's, you know, that in recovery what's been difficult is relationships. And I think when I wasn't in recovery, my issue was relationships. The first one was to myself and then to everyone else. I felt small. I felt less than everyone. I thought everyone else had the right idea and I didn't. I mean, I came in and I said to someone, oh, I might be really crap tonight when I do a share. And she said, well, no, you won't. That's your negative self. I had this part of me that constantly belittled me and undermined me. And it's a tyrant. I've still got it. It's a tyrant in there. You're shit, you're this, you're that. And I've had that forever. I don't remember a time. I hardly have it now. in comparison, but I always had it. And I remember it. I remember it at 11. I mean, it's interesting what you remember, isn't it, when you think back? At 11, I was at primary school, I think I was in year five, and I was playing skipping rope, and everyone's going, oh, look at her skinny legs, look at her skinny legs. Mortified. I was mortified that people were looking at me going, even noticing I had a pair of legs, let alone they were skinny, right? It was like I wanted to just fade. I wanted to fade into the background, but I wanted to be the best at everything and out the front and bigger than everyone. So I had this constant dilemma of being really tiny and small and fading, you know, don't look at my legs. Don't. I mean, I used to wear, I mean, I was from Australia, it was hot, right? And so I was a, we lived on the beach was like my front yard. Mum had this boyfriend, it was really not a very good situation. But anyway, so my sister and I would go to the beach a lot, and I was a lifesaver. But I wore bathers that were up to here, and, you know, I couldn't bear my body. I couldn't bear anyone looking at me. And all the photos of me, I'm just like, my hair, I had long hair, and my hair's like this. You know, I'm covering my face. I'm sort of standing with my arms covering my body. I was so uncomfortable. But I wanted to be amazing. And I wanted to be amazing. I wanted to be like you because that's what I saw in you. So I was just projecting any good I had into you, and then I was left with this tyrant telling me I was rubbish and slinking into the background. And that's why I use. I mean, there was plenty more reasons. I can think of a million reasons why I use. I liked it. I had a lot of fun. Played a lot of pool. You know, I mean, it's funny. I was at a meeting last night. There's all these young people there, and I'm not young anymore. And I thought, which is really freaking me out. And I thought, you know, when I was young, I was going to pubs. We were listening to bands. I was going out with the guys in the bands. I was, you know, really cool. I wasn't. I was using smelly, horrid, failing everything. You know, like, not great, but that's what I thought. That I was this sort of really cool, kind of edgy. You know, I wasn't. Oh, I don't think I was at all. But I'm not that now either, which is... but I think that was my dream, that I was just, I don't know, like... I loved public image, and we would go and see them. When they came to Australia, we'd go and start spitting and jumping up and down, and I wanted to be cool, like Blondie or something, and I wasn't. And I loved Susie in the band. She's like, I wanted to be like that, you know, like that sort of, I don't know, druggy. I mean, it's sad, isn't it, that that's what I wanted to be? Anyway, that's what I wanted to be. Because it felt like it would protect me from this very small side of me, the part that was really small and fearful and very anxious, and I don't know what I was doing. So anyway, I was at uni, and I kept using, and I kept drinking, and I used needles, and I used anything that you could put in a needle, and I... we drank pure alcohol for fun. You know, I mean, it was, you know, I did anything I could. I ended up pimping a girl, Vivian. I know her now. I don't know if she died. It makes me so upset when I share about it. But to her to get the money so that I could use. I starved my cat and took it back. I mean, I wanted to use so much. I just wanted, I could not get enough. And that's the power of my addiction was why I ended it, why I stopped at 21. Because I don't know, I mean, I could have gone lower. I could have gone to jail. I could have become a prostitute myself. I could, but that would have required much too much courage on my part. I'm not sure I could have done it. Oh, we were breaking and entering into houses. I mean, I just... And I was going to places a bit like when I, you know, was 13 or 15 going to pubs. I was ending up in places, in areas in Melbourne that I didn't know, when people had guns and really rough. And I was so scared all the time. So I just used and used and used. And then I'd end up back in my area in a pub listening to bands, just thinking, you know, I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of this. And I'm not an addict, is what I actually thought. I'm not an addict. It's because I don't have the right boyfriend. I didn't have the right family. Someone should just give me a break. I need, you know, a better college to go to. You know, I don't know. It was not because I was an addict at all that this was happening to me. And it's interesting thinking back, because at the time, if you... I don't know what I thought I was doing. I thought it was all right. Anyway, I ended up in a detox, and I ended up in a detox, and my mother came back from the travelling that she had never done because she was a single mother. She came back for me, terrible, her first trip to Europe, to find me in a detox, and I went to my first meeting at this detox, and I left the detox, and of course I used. I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to stop because I never, ever, ever thought I was an addict. I thought it was because I had the mum I had, or the sister I had, or whatever. My sister had disowned me. I'd set a kitchen alight. I was using. It wasn't good. So I don't know. I don't know what happened after that. I started going to meetings eventually. I was sleeping with a guy I used with, and he got into NA, and I kept sleeping with him because he didn't want to sleep with me because he wanted to be in NA, but I was still using, so I went with my ex-boyfriend that was his friend, but they're not friends anymore, so I just kept using, and it was just all pretty rubbish. I'm trying not to swear. It was all pretty rubbish, and... But I ended up using every, third day, every fourth day. I'd get the money to get Michael, my ex, who was still using, to go and score for me. And then I was living with my mum, because it was after this rehab, and I was homeless. So I was living with my mum, and he'd bring the drugs around, and I'd use, and I'd go to bed and read. And that's what I was doing, and to hide it from my mum, so she didn't think. And I was working. Oh, God, it was awful. It was awful. Anyway, so I eventually came to NA, and I eventually came on my own to NA for me, because I had nothing better to do. I had no friends, and I had no money, and I wasn't cool, and I didn't know what else to do. And I was very, very frightened still. I mean, fear is this sort of thing I just have had forever. And so I got into it, and I loved it. And what I did at uni was drama. And I did, the other thing about the drama is that I really wanted to be an actor. And I thought I'd be really good, except that I was so frightened. And because I was such a shell of a person, every time I had to play a role, and I could do it, I could do the play, but I'd have to have a hit. So I'd go to the toilet, I'd hit up, and then I'd go and I'd do this, my plays, and every night I would do this stuff, and because it was uni, it was this sort of degree, and you had to do these shows, I had to sing in one, and I cannot sing a note. And I would just use, and then go and do it. Anyway, they kicked me out of college eventually because I was using. But anyway, but this whole thing of wanting to be an actor, this idea that I was such an empty shell and so frightened, and yet the one thing I wanted to do was I had to put myself in front of everyone. And then when everyone actually looked at me, I'd run a mile. So I wasn't very good. I wasn't very good at all because I didn't believe in myself. I just didn't believe in myself. And I think you kind of have to be an actor. So I tried a bit of comedy, and I couldn't do that either because that was even worse. I did get a partner, though, in recovery, and I did a little bit of stand-up comedy in recovery, very, very early recovery. It was such a laugh. But I was still so frightened. I must have been 2 years clean or something. I couldn't handle it. So this girl went off to Sydney and made her fortune in comedy, and I did something completely different, which is fine, because I was never going to be an actor. But I was gutted. I was gutted about that. I was so gutted. So I got into recovery, and my sponsor was 10 years older than me, and I was still, don't make any major decisions in the first year of recovery. Don't get in a relationship in your first year of recovery. Do the steps. Go to meetings. Do service. So I stayed with my boyfriend because we were both clean. I made decisions. I got a job. I went to uni full time. I just did everything because I was young. And I thought, I'm not going to listen to these old people in NA, and I'm going to do what I want to do. And I had a fantastic, fantastic first 3 years of recovery because I was still with this guy, Piers. And I was still with Piers. So I was fine. So what I hadn't done in recovery, I hadn't put everything down. I had, I put down the drugs, I put down the alcohol, put down my family, getting on with my mum. Sister didn't talk to me, that was fine. And didn't speak to my con, he was in Greece, didn't have to worry. But hadn't put down this relationship. So at 3 years clean, I find he's going to Sydney to visit these girls because he's playing in a band in Sydney. Oh, And he's sitting with these girls. So Kazan goes, I want to leave you. Wow. That was it. In the corridor, I was beside myself. And I was broke. I said, don't leave me. I was like a desperate. Please don't leave me. What will I do without you? Who will I be without you? How will I feel the gap, the gaping gap, this hole that I have inside me? If it's not you and it's not drugs, what am I going to do? So Piers leaves. I then decide to give up smoking and I ate. I ate for king and country. Never, never had I had an issue with food before because I smoked 40 cigarettes a day in recovery and coffee and, you know, everything. And I'd never experienced the sort of, like, sober or clean what it was like to have this obsession and compulsion. And I had it with food, and it was the first time ever, and it was awful. And I have, on and off since then, had my stuff with my problem with food, right? Which is that sometimes I get on one. Sometimes I don't, but sometimes I do, but I do. Then, at 3 years clean, when I didn't know what was going on, it was terrible. Because I was using, not drugs, but food, my defects, I start wanting to pretend I'm something that I'm not. I start wanting to be you. I start judging you. I start sort of being so envious of people that I can't sit still in my own skin. I'm thinking about, oh, I should be like this. Oh, I've had that. Oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to... I'm a piece of shit. I'm this. I'm pathetic. You're pathetic. What's going on? And I just... This noise started. And it lasted... I don't know how long it lasted. I can't remember. But it was awful. And I had never had this in recovery. And I had to go back to the steps. And I had already done the steps and I went back and did them a second time because I was in the grip of this obsession and compulsion and I was full of fear and I was clean, you know, and I was doing really well and I had service and I, you know, spoke to my sponsor. It wasn't like I'd left NA. I was going to meetings. At 3 years clean, I was at just finishing my uni. They'd kicked me out and then I'd gone back and repeated everything I'd failed and I finally did it and it was a teaching degree in the end, not acting, because that was out. Very different teacher acting, very different. But anyway, I did the steps again and, you know, it was being confronted again with my powerlessness. So I first get to NA and I, you know, you're powerless over your addiction, Anna. And so the stories I tell about my addiction, it's very obvious that I'm powerless over using drugs because I put them before everything and anything. And I got clean pretty easily because I knew how powerless I was. But I had no idea, once you start peeling back the layers, that you actually have to do some work. You actually have to think deeper. So I think I was just being... It's not that... My early recovery was rubbish, but the more you stay around each day, the more I just understood about myself, the more I made connections to my past, that I was actually really angry. No one would have guessed it. I don't think I even had I didn't have a feeling for 5 years in recovery, so no one would have guessed that I was really angry. No one would have guessed that I was lonely because I had this facade that pretended and showed you all that actually I was fine. I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. What is it? Fucked up, insecure, neurotic and emotional. I mean, I cannot tell you. I was beside myself. So I start eating and, and doing these steps again. And I suddenly realise, you know, what is God? I've never really believed in God. I kind of believe in God. I'm not Christian. I don't really know what God is. You know, what does it really mean to hand my thinking, my actions over to something? What does that really mean? I had to really start thinking. What is prayer? Am I actually praying? I don't know that I ever prayed. Actually, in early recovery at 21, was I really praying? I don't know if I was. I tried. I tried to sort of calm myself down and sort of think about... I'd chant, let go, let God, let go, let God. I'd walk around chanting. I'd chant the serenity prayer, but, you know, I'd go, let go, let go. You know, I just sort of tried to let go, and I don't know... It didn't really mean anything, and it... Because I'm a very practical person and I want things that are concrete. And I was young. I wanted, what does this mean? I needed maths. I want 1 + 1 = 2. What's God? You know, I don't know. But I did the steps again and I was always doing service. I did service non-stop. So I was about 11 years clean, 12, 13 when I had my first child. And that's, I was... going to a regional committee member meeting pregnant with my first son. And that's when my service sort of changed. But I did a lot of service up until then because it meant I couldn't isolate. Because the other thing about me and not having any feelings for 5 years in recovery, or longer, is that because I pretended to be okay, I couldn't talk to you. I couldn't ask you for help. I wanted to. I would look at you and I'd say, oh, I could just tell them I feel lonely, and I could never say it. So I had to do service. I had to do service and stay in a meeting to just have people around me sort of talking. Because I, although I'm extremely dependent, that makes me angry when I'm dependent. You know, I'm a drug addict. I have a lot of dependency issues. You know, I'm really dependent and I don't like it. I'm also extremely independent, and I hate being vulnerable. I hate being needy. I hate it. I don't like feeling I owe someone. I don't even know if it's that. Feeling that someone can see in me. That someone can see in me, and what they're going to see is that broken, frightened little girl, or 13-year-old or 15-year-old when I first started using that. I think that's what it is. And yes, so I have this whole issue around asking for help. And I never rang my sponsor. I used to ring my sponsor when I fancied. She'd say, ring me every day. I'd go, all right. I never rang. I just never rang her. I couldn't. But it was fine. You know, we got on with it. So anyway, I don't even know where I'm at now. But anyway, all this sort of doing the steps again. And I've done the steps a few times in recovery. And as the years have gone on and having done them, and I know myself more and more intimately, it links. I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt when I start getting intolerant or impatient, I can see the link to exactly what has happened that has made me like that. It's normally I'm envious that someone's got something that I want. It's kind of around at the moment around cars, right? I have a lot of car envy at the moment. I don't know why, particularly now, but anyway, it's car envy. And I'm not going to go and get a car because I don't need one and I don't really care about cars, but I've got it. So I feel small. But, you know, I've got this car envy, but I feel small somewhere. That's what's going on. It's not about the car. I'm not happy where I am. So my envy's coming up, right? My little defect. So, you know, I want something that someone else has. So what am I comparing myself? Am I walking around judging people? Am I being intolerant? What's happening at home? You know, what's happening at work? What's going on? I think I'm actually quite lonely. I think what happens is I get caught up with my family life, with the kids, and I don't talk to anyone. I mean, I have sponsors. I mean, you know, I sort of like I'm not isolated completely. I'm not a hermit. You know, I've got sponsees ringing me. I talk to my husband. I go to work. I'm doing stuff. But I don't think I'm actually saying anything about me. I think I'm talking about them, which is really easy for me. It's great. Deflect. Don't come near me. Because I suppose if someone actually asked me at the moment, I think the whole issue of not being young anymore is kind of really apparent to me at the moment because I've been... You know, in recovery, everything, when I did my first fourth step, I wrote down, what do I want from my recovery? My sponsor said, you know, write down, what do you want from your recovery? And it was things like, wanted to be God-centred, not self-centred. I wrote that, I think, for her. Right? I don't think. I don't think in a year, 18 months, I really knew what that meant, but I think I wrote it because we were talking about it in the meetings, right? Be God-centred, not self-centred. Okay. So I wrote that, right? Have peace of mind. You know, have tolerance, all this kind of stuff. And everything I wrote on that list, I've still got it, I've done. I've travelled. I left Australia when I was 7 years clean because I wanted to explore my Greekness because Con had left my mum and gone to Greece and I wanted to come to Europe. You know, I've travelled. I have slept with lots of people. I don't think... Not recently, but in my recovery. So I don't... You know, I probably don't really need to be doing that anymore. Although when I hear things like the love boat, you know, and there's a... You know, it's true. I think, I could do, you know, go to this, and I think, why would I go? I'd take Joe, bring the kids. You know, I can't have a loved one. It's not going to happen. So, you know, I still think there's a part of me that is mourning my youth, because I loved it. I loved my early recovery. I loved sleeping around. I didn't do it in the fellowship. I didn't. I've done it a little in the fellowship, but not a lot. But when I got clean, there were only 5 meetings in Melbourne, so there weren't a lot of people to pick from. And I've got to tell you, there were a lot older than me, and I was not happy with that, you know. So, you know, and I think I did actually mention that peers went to Sydney to sleep with this girl, which is why I broke up at 3:10, but I was also sleeping with people, just so it's clear. So I've done a lot of sleeping around in recovery. I've seen lots of bands in recovery, none of it recent. And I think I'm just going through a time where I'm thinking about how it's not just luck being in here. It isn't, you know, I can't sit here and go, oh, I'm so lucky to be in NA. I'm lucky you set NA up so that I could come, but it has been hard work. I've had to come. How many thousands of meetings have I been to? How many thousands of people have I heard and shares and go, oh, they're talking about that again. And actually, do you know, I have come here. I mean, when you go to meetings and nothing really's happened, you go, you leave, you go, yeah, it's all right, yeah, fine. You know, I've done, I don't know how many churches I've been to, sitting in dingy rooms, smelly rooms. We all used to smoke in the meetings. I mean, you know, it was like smoke everywhere. So, thousands of meetings. The amount of step work I've done. The miles with my pen that I've done. You know, gratitude list, gratitude. 10th step, oh my God, I've got to do. I mean, I did a 10th step. I must have done it 3 months, 6 months, every day. I needed it. I was not well, you know. Like, so, you know, I would write this 10th step. I would take it on holiday. Because I needed help to think. I needed help to get perspective about life and what I was doing. Because I think Matthew even said it, you know, that self-centered place, if I'm fearful, the first thing I do is become self-centered and self-obsessed. So if I'm going to do a step 10, I completely forget that anything actually exists outside of my head. That I have to, it is, so, you know, these steps and sort of coming to NA and I don't know what I'm saying now, but I don't know. So today, I have these two children who, you know, I don't know if they're going to be addicts or I don't. I do the best I can. I'm not the perfect mother, you know. I make mistakes, but I don't. That voice that says, you're awful, you're a piece of shit, why are you like this? It doesn't happen so much anymore. I don't wake up with the fear, you know, that knot in your stomach. You wake up and there's this dread about another day of having to walk through treacle because nothing seems to be easy and there's no peace. There's this constant noise about what I am and what I haven't got and what I should be and how it could be, and I don't have this anymore. I wake up and if I'm depressed, again, it's normally because I haven't talked to anyone. It's normally because I'm still isolating. I'm not doing my step 1, 2, 3. You know, I mean, I was talking to someone about step one. I was talking to my sister. My sister, when my mum died, my sister is in AA. She's in another fellowship. And she's just turned 17. And it's amazing. It's amazing because we're at loggerheads a lot, my sister and I. And I, anyway, so, and we were talking about sort of the how, you know, and she was trying to explain to a sponsee of hers, the sponsee's madness, you know, about sort of where your head goes. And we were sort of talking about this sort of being open-minded and how easy it is to shut down, to just stop listening, to stop realising that actually, if I ever decide that I know, then I'm not working step two. If I decide I know this, I know my life, I know what's going to happen, then I'm actually not working step two, which means it's got to follow that I'm not doing step three. And it probably also follows that I'm actually not doing step one, which is being honest with myself, which is that every time I close my mind, I'm in danger of using. And, you know, 28 years later, it doesn't matter. It's a minute away from me using. Every fibre of my body is an addict. You can hear it. I talk like someone who knows how to use. I know how to use. It hasn't left me in 28 years. It's not going anywhere. So it was really interesting talking to Karen about this sort of being open-minded and what does it really mean. And that's why I think it's important to know what my using was about, why I was so frightened and why I need this program. And then over the years, how to put the program in when I get these new problems, because I don't want to pick up. I don't want to pick up, but I can use in other ways. You know, I can use. So I don't know. I think that's it. I love NA. I love NA. And I, you know, I know people that leave NA. You know, my Piers, the guy I got clean with, I actually knew him. I got a photo of Piers, Michael and I, the three of us, when we were 18 at my place and I'd moved out of home. I mean, unbelievable. He left NA and he's angry. He's actually a very angry man. You know, I don't want to be a person, you know, if I know I'm an addict, why would I not come to NA? Right? Why would I not come to NA? I love the fact that people smile at me. I love the fact that I come to a meeting and you tell me what I'm feeling, because I'm not going to tell you how I'm feeling. You know, I love the fact, you know, I love the fact that I've got sponsees who I'm much better at, and I can just say, you know, get on with your own thing. You're an adult, but this is what happened to me. You know, I don't have to tell people how to do it anymore, thank God. You know, I love it. And we've told my kids recently, because they're 15 and 13, the 15-year-old's been talking about drugs and stuff, we've told them for the first time that we do this thing, because they always go, why don't you drink? You know, why? You know, because they go to their friend's house, there's always beer or something, you know, or they go, oh, we tried wine at so-and-so's house, and there's never any wine at our house. So, and we told them it was fine, it wasn't anything dramatic. We talked about it for about, they had about a 2-minute concentration span. They go, oh, yeah, fine, you know, and it's, so, you know, it's in, I love it. I grew up in NA, I've become a mother in NA, I lost my mother in NA, I've slept with many people in NA. Do you know, I got a wonderful husband in NA who's in NA. He, you know, yeah, I know it's time. So, you know, I could go on, but no, I won't. I'm on a roll. So I just, and I think, do you know what I think has happened by sitting here? I feel a bit less fearful. I think when I came here, I was frightened of my future, and I think that's the whole thing about getting older. But actually, I feel slightly less fearful, and that's the power of NA. And that's why I come, because I can't get it on my own. I can't get it, and I don't want to use. So thank you so much. Thank you.